Yes, no time for a pause. We go straight to Gene Shepherd. The Labor Day program from Monday, September 5th, 1966. The Milkman Labor Day Parade. And due to some technical glitches at slicklives.com, I'm not sure how recently we may or may not have played this one. I hope it's not too recently, but I have no way to tell. My last notes are that I played this 10 years ago.
As we walk down the silent halls of the empty offices, we see that the only people who are laboring on Labor Day are the laborers. And all the rest are off playing, gambling in the sun, or quietly riding out life's holidays in a sea of leisure. One word of warning, though, all of you klutzes out there. Your offices are still here. The doors are closed. The locks are securely fastened. The only trouble is, there are several of you, we have just received the report, who, when you come back from your Labor Day weekend, will find yourself locked out of the office. We just thought we ought to warn you so that you won't be too unpleasantly surprised when you arrive back here in Manhattan after the festivities are over. Feel that key in your pocket? It may not fit the lock right now. But that's all right. There are plenty of opportunities. And remember this, friend. As they're going to say to you Wednesday or Thursday when you finally get in to see Mr. Bullard, he'll look up at you and say, Charles, we feel that you're not really able to expand here. It's really going to be for the best. So remember that as you float on your back out there. Labor Day, Labor Day. If that isn't a true American holiday. Oh, speaking of the truly American, before we get involved here, I have a little bulletin for those of you who are fans of slob art. We have a note here. It says, Shepherd, I've listened to your show for quite a while, listening to your comments about slob. He thinks I'm complaining about slob art. As a matter of fact, I'm a fan of slob art. Fellow, you're wrong. There's nothing I enjoy more than to see a lawn covered with concrete elves hiding under concrete toadstools riding atop the backs of concrete frogs. No, I enjoy that. He thinks I complain. No, seriously. I'm the first to admit I'm an S-L-O-B. It says, listen to you complain, that's the bad word, about slob art in New Jersey. Well, I think it is time somebody set the record straight. I have seen on North Jerusalem Road in East Meadow, Long Island, a concrete pink elephant. Not only that, but on top of the elephant, there is a cluster of tiny elephants, for some reason or other, surrounding a pink lamppost. And so tonight on Labor Day, we salute that man out there in East Meadow, Long Island, who once again makes a statement on behalf of the basic slobbishness of the human soul. I admire someone. How do you mull around a pink elephant, though? It's a little piercing. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe the pink elephant is knee-deep in weeds and crabgrass. And so tonight, we salute laborers everywhere. For those of you who have left the sweatshop for this little tiny holiday, for those of you who are saluting yourselves as you float on your back in the beaches and wait in long lines in the traffic, bring it up there. There go the plumbers. Attention, don't miss the plumbers there with their plumber helpers held at port arms. It's a very beautiful sight. There go the bricklayers laying bricks. As they go. And there go the electricians blowing fuses. Strikers, one and all. And so today we salute laborers everywhere, the malcontent. My old man was the greatest Labor Day parade fan I ever ran into in my life. Do they even have Labor Day parades anymore? Other than up and down the boardwalk at Fire Island? Huh? Does Labor parade these days at Jones Beach? Hey, with a hot dog in one hand, a beer in the other, hey, and a blonde on the crook of the arm? Yeah, cha-cha, and why not? We are here but for a moment. We fly through this bitter, searing flame, but for an instant. And so we must sip deeply at the wells of passion while we may. That's pretty good, isn't it? Hear that sound? That's the sound of labor. All of us. I met Mr. Leader, our salutary leader here, the commander-in-chief. I met Mr. Leader here in the elevator a couple of days ago, and he had that flush, that pink, wonderful look of a man about to enjoy himself, and I said, "Where are you going, Mr. Leader?" He says, "Well, Labor Day weekend. Wow." Yeah. And I continue to ride up and down the elevator, and the guys continue to wash the floors of the offices. And the only people I realized who are not allowed to parade on Labor Day, to ride the fantail of the yacht off Bayhead, Long Island, is labor itself. I notice you're here, Corny. I notice Arlene Francis ain't here. Just thought I'd make that little note in passing. Resmapass. Oh, this is a beautiful music. Pump. Very good, very good. Now, since it is Labor Day, we really should do something here. Hardly anybody on these, this the particular type of holiday that we have in America, hardly anyone talks about them when we actually have them. Like last Thanksgiving, I listened all day long and nobody mentioned Thanksgiving at all. And was except to say that they felt that it was going to break all records in traffic fatalities. Every holiday we hit, there is always a guy that comes on immediately on the news, like 2 minutes after the holiday begins, says the National Safety Council predicts that this holiday will once again break all records in blah, 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 blah. It seems that to most people today, a holiday is a means either of taking, a long standing in the traffic drive or getting killed. One or the other. Now, I'm just trying to be a realist here, that's all, you know. Nobody talks about the holiday itself. You know, like Thanksgiving. Nobody talks about really what Thanksgiving is about. You know what you can do? Fourth of July, nobody discusses what Fourth of July is about. Fourth of July really seems to be a time when you go to Montauk for 3 days. But what is it about? You know, what is this thing? What about Labor Day? The Labor Day Parade. Well, you know, as an ex-laboring man, and I never forget my days. It's going to remain with me forever and ever. My days in the steel mill. These are days you do not forget. And they came at a particularly impressionable period in my life. I, of course, the town that I live in, I don't worry very much whether Labor Day means much here in the East, because most of the people, at least certainly in New York City, particularly in Manhattan, labor really consists of standing around the Schraft coffee wagon at lunchtime, you know, the coffee break. Labor consists of going out to the Chock Full of Nuts for half an hour after you come back from lunch where you were gone for an hour and a half. And we have many laboring men here at WOR whose entire labor consists of trying to get the 512 every day to Westport or to Darien, where, oh yeah, that's their big moment, the big crisis of the day is whether or not they can get off the phone early enough. And by the way, they're on the phone making arrangements for tomorrow's lunch. Whether or not they can get off the phone in time to get down to the station to catch the 512. Oh, you see, the only time you really see excitement, the flush of, you know, the pursuit, the flush of the battle in their faces is when you see them dashing into the elevator here. And you know that they're catching the 512. Once in a while, a guy will sneak out early and catch the 436. In which case, he pretends like he's going out to see a client. So that's another whole shtick, you know, it's a whole thing. But out in the Midwest, where labor is labor, out around Pittsburgh, where guys, you know, carry lunch boxes and they wear those blue shirts. And you know the blue shirt that is such a big thing today in fashion, you know, those blue denim shirts. Well, that's the last thing a guy would ever think of wearing on a Sunday or wearing as a fashion thing in, say, Hammond, Indiana, or Pittsburgh, or Altoona, PA. You know, that's the thing you wear day in and day out when you're on the job. That's a work shirt. They call them a denim work shirt. How many of you ever heard of the work shirt? I remember the time when I got as a birthday gift, and surprisingly enough, I was delighted, you know, to get it. I got as a birthday gift a set of three beautifully packaged in cellophane, three brand new work shirts. That was a gift. It was birthday. And the name of the work shirt, what was the symbol they had on it? Yeah, come on now. The symbol of a guy. He's holding something. Two guys, that's right. Two guys, that's right. All right, I'll give you a brass figure with bronze oak leaf palm if you can tell me the work shirt that has as a symbol two guys pulling on each arm of the shirt. That's their symbol, and it's not ripping. They're pulling like that. What's the name of that work shirt? Now, how do you like that for a laboring man, boy? And I got three of those shirts, and I remember taking them out. That work shirt? No, I'm sorry. It's not the Iroquois work shirt. That's not at all what the... No. No, I'm sorry. Male pouch is the name of a chewing tobacco. It's something else again. And I might as well do a labor story here today, should I? Of the day when I was a laboring man, you know, I remember the concept of writers and people who write for these liberal magazines, you know, the idealistic magazines. Their idea of what a laboring man is, I mean, I'm talking about a real factory worker, has very little relationship to an actual factory worker. I've always wondered what it would be like if you took about maybe 600 or 700 laboring guys in and had them watch, say, Clifford Odets. I could see about 600 guys sitting there watching, waiting for Lefty and blowing their stack. That poetic idea of the laboring man looking up at the sky, played by John Garfield, and he says, I feel within me, I feel the bird of freedom fluttering against the cage of the terrible toil that I must spend my days. I must spend my days spinning out this web. Oh, so wait for Lefty, and the sun shall rise in the east, and blah, blah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's not quite the way it is. I remember the old man, you know, Labor Day. He was a member of a union. He was a dynamic union member. Now, I don't mean a militant union member, a dynamic union member. He loved to revel in all things union. In fact, he even got elected one time, you know, to some little piddling office in the union. He was the sergeant at arms or something like that. He was always going to union meetings. Now, as a kid, every week he'd say, up, Wednesday night, union meeting. And he'd come back at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you'd smell him. He'd come in the house, and there'd be a great whack, you know, great fantastic blast of Pabst Blue Ribbon, you know, would immediately permeate the house. And you could see that labor was really not... there was a little more at the union meetings, you know, than standing up and say, and I say, that washroom, why they ought to do something about, what about them stairs in the shipping department? And capitalistic oppressors, No, there was a little more to it, and he'd come walking in the house, and be 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm asleep, and I smell that, everybody wake up, and he just can't help it. It would be that tremendous smell of Pabst Blue Ribbon or Schlitz or Blatz or whatever it would be. And he would come in through the house and carrying his bowling ball. He always went to the union meeting, took his bowling ball with him in a big sack, and had the big leather bag of the bowling ball. And after the meeting, these guys would all go bowling. Apparently, it seemed that they did a lot of bowling at Flick's Tavern. But they would come in and every Labor Day, for about a month before Labor Day, there would be this talk around the house. The old man was always on because he was a tremendous parade fan. I mean, a dedicated parade man. From about, from about the middle of August on, he was on the committee to plan the Labor Day parade, or at least to plan his particular union's delegation to the Labor Day parade. And so he would have, I remember one night, I'm a kid, I come home from playing ball or breaking windows or chasing after Jane or something, and I come home. It's summertime, and here's the old man sitting at the table, the dining room table, and he's got the tablecloth off, and there are two other guys. Zudok is in there. That was his friend from the union was Zudok and Harry Gertz. And Zudok and Gertz are sitting down there. They've got papers all over the place, all over, the piece of paper all over the floor, and they've got them all hanging on the wall with little pins and all that. They are designing the badge that they are going to wear in the Labor Day parade. Big badge, and it had their number of their union, 122, local, ABCD, LUF, Series 4, you know, that kind of thing. And they had a big golden thing, and they were designing this pin, designing the badge. And I came in the house, and I looked at this thing, you know, and they're all designing it. Because I love badges, too. I don't think there's a man alive who does not secretly like the idea of a badge. Love badges. Have you noticed, speaking of badges, have you noticed the growing thing around today about getting the insignia on the blazer, you know? Well, after the other night, I did a show about the Macy's, of course. They're selling regimental stripes and all that. Well, after the show, a friend of mine called, and he says, listen, man, he says, you know, I heard you tell about those blazers and all those great regimental crests and all that you can buy. He says, all summer, he says, I've been spending my summer out in Long Island. He said, and these people don't know, of course, that I'm nothing. He said, because I bought myself a very expensive blazer and I have a pair of these bell-bottom pants, you know, and I look very sharp. And so I've been invited to all these cocktail parties at the yacht clubs and one thing and another. And he says, I'm going there. And he says, I met this guy. This is a friend of mine. And he says, this guy has been going to all these things, and he sees all these beautiful crests that these guys are all wearing out there. Now, these are people who believe in crests. You know, they got the big jaws. You know, they kind of say, things aren't. This is not the way they used to be at Exeter, you know. Oh, no, my God, you know, they've taken the bench off the Lover's Walk, and it's just not the way. You know, remember the old bird bath that old Weatherby used to... dunk Weatherby in the bird bath all the time. The bird bath is gone. They put a Howard Johnson there. Things are just not like they used to be at Exeter. Well, he's out there digging this scene, and he came home back to New York one day, and he took out the Yellow Book. He went through the Yellow Book, and he found out there is a place in New York where you can get a crest made. You can get an actual crest, you know, the kind with all woven and all that stuff, and you get it made. And you can get it made custom. They'll make it up anyway. And so he went down and had this magnificent crest made. It had crowns. It had all kinds of swords crossed and rifles. And it had little leaves, green leaves, oak leaves, and all that stuff. And it had a Latin inscription under it. And in gold leaf, he had woven in an intricate design, P.S. 119. And he put this thing on his blazer. It says, P.S. 119. And people were noticing his beautiful crest. You know, they figured he went to some great school. And he says they'd come over and they'd sip their martinis. And he says once in a while a guy would get close enough to really read it. He says a funny look would come across his face. P.S. Of course he figured P.S. meant Facilum Subiscus or something, some great Latin phrase. P.S. 119. Oh, does that actually say P.S. 119? And say, yeah. And he says, no, the guy would drift away. He said, never got invited back to that cocktail party after they discovered his crest said P.S. 119. Speaking of labor, we've got a little labor thing to do here. Would you hit the button, please, Corny? Hit the button.
Fill her up, ma'am?
Yes, please.
Check the oil?
Yes, and add a pint of STP.
Oh, using too much oil?
No.
Noisy valve lifters?
No.
Oh, you're using STP for better gas mileage. And because...
Because STP lubricates every moving part of the engine and gives it continued protection from oil change to oil change. In cars, STP gives a more positive piston seal that prevents blow-by, which is why STP increases compression and gives more power and better gas economy. Now, in the transmission...
Whoa! Say... Who you been talking to?
Andy Granatelli.
The Granatelli who races those Novis at Indianapolis?
Mm-hmm. He's my husband.
Well, he should know.
Well, I think so, too.
One pint of STP. Coming up.
Next time you need oil, every time you change oil, add STP oil treatment.
Gee, that's a typical conversation that you hear at a gas station, isn't it? That guy sounded like a gas station attendant, didn't he, though? Indeed. Speaking of typical gas station conversations, this is WOR, in squeaky old noisy static full AM. And we're here in friendly old empty Manhattan, and as far as I'm concerned, the best time to be in Manhattan is on a big holiday like Labor Day, when everybody clears out and you can just walk right down the middle of Broadway and say whatever you want to say right in the middle, and you'll not even get knocked over by a cab or a lady carrying a shopping bag. Oh, yes, it's New York. And before we do anything else, speaking of driving and all that stuff, we have here with us tonight Rover. For those of you who are sitting out there in a fantastic, involved tangle of traffic, and your kidneys are hurting from sitting in that uncomfortable seat there, and your foot is hot from the motor overheating, and you know that you're looking out through the windshield. If you notice how many of the cars today, somebody should point out that some of the glass they're using in automobiles today is obscene. Have you looked through some of the windshields of some of the better cars, the curved windshields? Have you noticed how all the trees wiggle? And how it is like looking through the funhouse mirror at Coney Island. If you're sitting there in that hot, steamy old sponge of yours, we would suggest that the next time you think seriously of doing something about cars, you consider seriously the Rover 2000 TC, a magnificent English automobile, beautiful car. And if you would like to know more about this great creation of the ingenious mind of man, this is a car that's meant to be an automobile, not a piece of junk jewelry. This is a car that's meant to be a piece of transportation, not an example of pop art on wheels. We suggest you drop a card to me, pop art, no, I suggest you drop a card to me, Rober. Rober, here at WOR, and we'll send you pictures of the magnificent 2000 TC. Cha-cha-cha-cha. Hit the button there, Cornice. There it goes.
Try a new Mayo 7 with that real mayonnaise taste.
7 calories per teaspoon. It watches your waist.
Try a new Mayo 7 with the flavor that's in.
Spoon on Mayo 7
and spread yourself thin.
Would you believe that new Mayo 7 has that real mayonnaise flavor and only 7 calories per teaspoon? You only have to taste it to believe it. Yes, Mayo 7's new secret formula lets you eat and enjoy your favorite foods. Fish, chicken, eggs, salads, almost anything you desire to stay slim without worrying about calories. Because Mayo 7 has only 7 calories per teaspoon. So savor the delicious flavor Mayo 7 brings out and taste the creamy texture it puts in. Spoon on Mayo 7 and spread yourself thin.
Spoon on new Mayo 7.
And spread yourself
in. You know, I should take you for a moment behind the scenes in the advertising world. Would you believe that this stuff, Mayo 7, Corny, we've had it on the show here a couple of days, here about 2 or 3 weeks ago, they came on, and all of a sudden they disappeared from the station, from the show. And we got a note from the sponsor, and this is the truth, that this stuff was such a fantastic success that the factory was unable to supply all the stores throughout the New York area. In other words, this stuff not only really does taste like mayonnaise, many people think it even tastes better than most mayonnaise that you get in these little jars. Now, I am not a mayonnaise man, I'll tell you that frankly. And I gave a jar of this Mayo 7 to one of the people who works here at the station, Veronica, you know? And I gave it to her, and I says, you're a mayonnaise nut. Try this stuff out. And about 3 days later, she came back, and I didn't know her. She had lost 17 pounds. Her eyes were bright like chipmunks, you know? She had a bushy tail. And I said, what is it, baby? She says, Mayo 7. Fantastic. And so, I don't know, you know, magic is everywhere. Speaking of magic, would you please give me a little more of that sinister music in there? A little more of that. If your tail is dragging, friends, if you are fighting your way through that vast miasma of mediocre, modern, present-day, non-individualistic, decadent, sick, rotten 20th century society, if you're fighting against what seem to be forces beyond your will and beyond your control, if you are beginning to slowly sink into the morass of nothingness, as the sky arches over you and you reach out, ever beseeching to the clouds above you, who am I? What am I? Where am I going? I would give you a practical suggestion. if you want to feel that tingle of sudden self-realization course down through the poor, tired marrow of your bones, walk up to your candy counter, look him straight in the eye, and hold your jaw as firmly as possible, considering who you are. We know that it's quivering a little bit from time to time. Hold it very firmly. Look him right in the eye and say, Regal Crown, sour grapes, I am a sorehead. And then place one of those beautifully sculpted Regal Crown bits of candy, all hand-polished, all nicely cut from the pure block of Regal Crown sour grapes in the raw. Place it on your tongue, and 30 seconds later, coursing through your veins, will go that great charge of excitement. And then you'll begin to enjoy your first four-minute pucker. Regal Crown sour grapes. Sour lemon, sour apple, sour pineapple, sour, for just 10 cents. We just received a letter from a kid who says, I now can make my four-minute pucker last for over 10 minutes. Regal Crown. Enough of that. Enough of that. And keep that music ready there, because, you know, I've got to get back to this Labor Day thing, because I feel like a foreign visitor on days like this in New York City, and I really recognize the difference between different parts of the country on Labor or on Thanksgiving or on Halloween days, and I think you can tell the different cultures within a country or within a continent by the types of holidays they celebrate and the way they do it. For example, Labor Day was always celebrated around northern Indiana by two things. This fantastic parade that would start at about 6 o'clock in the morning. It would start out, oh boy, at the crack of dawn. And I remember as a kid, it was always like 150 degrees. And I'm a kid, see. And so I remember one particular Labor Day parade. And I must have been about 8 or 9, maybe younger, maybe 6 or 7. Something. I do remember one thing about it, that I remember seeing a whole lot of legs all around me. And the old man is wildly excited because it's the big parade, and he has been involved in designing the float. Now, the float was always a kind of expression of true slob art. You know that I don't think there's anything that more expresses, I suppose you might say, the basic aesthetics of a people than the kind of stuff that they parade around with. I have never seen a float on display, and I think it would be a great thing to do sometime here at the Museum of Modern Art. I think it will eventually happen. I think somebody at the Museum of Modern Art, or you know, one of the chic in camp type places, maybe this show here is liable to even give them an idea, is going to one day discover that pop art is not Andy Warhol painting over and over repetitions of, let's say, the Campbell's soup can or the Brillo box. True pop art can be found in the costume of, let's say, a drum majorette. This is the kind of stuff that people say, ain't that beautiful? Isn't that pretty? Isn't that beautiful? Wow. Now that's pop art. If you want to see pop art in dynamic display, you ever seen the Rose Bowl Parade? Ever seen that? This is pop art, man. I'll tell you. When you get a bunch of Kiwanis Club guys, you know, a bunch of guys from the Rotary Club, these guys' idea of beauty, I'll tell you, it's talk about primitive. And you get a bunch of guys from the Rotary Club and a bunch of guys from the Kiwanis and from the American Legion, a bunch of guys from the softball team, from the bowling league. You get all these guys together, and they're trying to create something beautiful. They will come up with what is known as the float. Now, to begin with, the float almost always has involved in it somewhere some chick who represents the spirit of Aphrodite. Now, they don't even know that. They don't necessarily say that. But they say, well, now, we've got to get the queen of Plumbers Local 422. Okay, and how about Lentz's daughter? Well, of course, the guy that's saying that has had his eye on Les's daughter for a long time. Les's daughter, you know, Les Rutkowski's daughter, Sophie.
And now, the next moment, you see Sophie mounting the float. Have you ever ridden on a float, friends? You're listening to a guy who one time played the Spirit of Pan on a float. I'm so help me, I'm raising my hand. I was about 9 years old, and that's why I'm saying. 9 years old, my old man's union, which is in the news all the time these days now, which is Jimmy Hoffa's union. Jimmy Hoffa's union, the Teamsters Union. Do you know what the Teamsters Union insignia is? Do any of you know it? This was around my house all the time. My old man would wear it in the lapel when he'd get all dressed up and get his blue suit on. He'd have this union button on. And that was considered the most beautiful thing he had. He always was very careful. It was kept in a little velvet box, you know, like a ring box. And this union button that he had somehow established his identity. He was a member of this thing. And he had his beautiful one that had been given to him because he had been a little executive in the local, like sergeant at arms or something like that. He would read the minutes, or he would lock the files. He was the keeper of the sacred key, or something like that. Or he was the guy in charge of keeping the rubber truncheons clean for scab day. You know, they had a thing called scab day when he would go out and just hit guys on the head, you know, all that kind of stuff. And he kept this little union button in a velvet case. And once in a while, when I was a kid, you know how you look through your parents when you're doing something really illicit, and you would look through your parents' bureau drawers, sneak around, look at that stuff. Well, I would see this pin kept in this velvet case, and would be stuck down in there. And it was made out of enamel, beautifully cut enamel. And it had two little pearls around the bottom of it, see? And it was his insignia, his pin. How many of you know what the Teamsters local pin looks like? Jimmy Hoffa's insignia. Oh, but very few of you know that they have an insignia. They have an emblazoned banner that to them is as important as some guy who went to a very posh Eastern prep school has all over his blazer. It was their version of it. You know what it is? You've never seen it? It's amazing. I'll bet you've seen it, but you don't recognize it. You don't know that it represents now today Jimmy Hoffa and his crowd. Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's a wheel. It's the Teamsters local, you see. Now, the Teamsters cover everything. My old man was not a Teamster, but the Teamsters local covers guys that work in the office, which is where he worked. It covers guys that drive trucks, and it covers guys that drive diesel engines and all kinds of things. Anything that has to do with roughly transportation. And they considered the milk business, which is what my old man was in the transportation business, really. There's no milk local or no milk union. It's the Teamsters local. Now, what is it? It's a wheel. But more than that, it's a wheel that has two horse heads. Two horses' heads looking in opposite directions over the top of the wheel. Now, do you recognize it? That's the Teamsters local or the Teamsters union. And he had this beautiful one. And it was made of white and blue enamel. Just a beautiful little thing. And on the bottom had these two little pearls. These two little pearls represented offices that he held in the union. Each pearl, I guess, meant the time you were elected. Two little pearls. And he would wear this thing proudly. And so on the day of the big moment was the day the old man came home. His eyes are bright and shining. And he says, Gene, mean me. He says, Genie, he said, I've got a big surprise for you. I said, what? I figured, you know, he's going to give me a new fielder's mitt, or he's bringing home a baseball, or maybe he's got hidden in the car a couple of popsicles or something like that. He says, a big surprise for you. I said, what? He says, you are going to ride on the float in the Labor Day parade. I'm going to ride on the float? You know, I had always been, this was my first taste of showbiz. Up to that point, I had always been, wherever I went, in the audience. I was this little guy, you know, sitting on top of my father's shoulder or hanging on somebody's knee, and all I would see, you know, were these people walking past. My eyeballs are bulging, you know, the big parade and the floats going by. And he says, yep, you're going to ride on the float. You and Stan Gertz. Well, Stan was a kid I hardly knew, but he was the kid of Harry Gertz, who was my old man's best friend. And so... about 2 or 3 days later, we were taken down to the dairy, me and Stan, in the back seat of the car. I'm sitting there with this kid, you know, I don't know him. He's about the same age as me. We're sitting back there. And up in the front is old Harry Gertz, and boy, he's yelling and hollering. The old man is hollering and yelling there and driving there. Big scene. We drive into the underbelly of the where they kept all the milk trucks. They had thousands of milk trucks all parked down there, and it was quiet. It was after they'd all returned. And this was where the old man lived and worked. And, you know, I don't know whether you've ever been in a dairy, a real working dairy, but there's a smell in a dairy, a very special smell. It's not exactly of sour milk. It is a milk smell, but it's combined with the smell of melted ice. It's the smell of trucks that have been greased. It's all mixed up together, but it is a dairy smell. And once you've smelled the smell of a dairy, you never forget it. And I went down into the garage. Always exciting to go to the place where my old man worked, you know. And we went down the garage, and here were all these silent milk trucks all standing all around the walls. And we went down deeper into the bowels of this place. There must have been 5,000 milk trucks, all these big trucks, you know, with Elmer painted all over the side, with Elmer and Elsie, the cow, all over the side, and the big sunflowers and all that. It was quiet. And there, right in the middle of the floor, where they washed the trucks, they had a special place where they did nothing but wash trucks and had lights all over the place, you know, the high ceiling. And right in the middle of that floor, there it was. They had taken one of the milk trucks, and they had extended it all out with wood and all kinds of things. And there, in the middle of the floor, was this fantastic float. And on all the boys, you know, the guys from the accounting department, the guys from the truck driving department, they had designed it. Remember, there was no Andy Warhol among them. There was no... actually, though, they went much further than Warhol would ever have gone. There was no Jackson Pollock among these guys. And they wanted to see this particular local had nothing. What are you looking at all the time? What's going on over there? The time? Is that what it is? Well, you watch. You've got plenty of time. You've got 10 minutes yet. And so they had. She's got a check yet. Oh, we'll wait. You get it. 5 minutes. Okay. And so they wanted to express the spirit of milk truck driving. Is what they wanted to do. They wanted to express the spirit of the milk truck driver. In other words, the spirit of the milkman. Now, very few people actually think of the milkman. You know, he's just a guy that comes and he gives you the milk and all that. But, you know, he recognizes himself as a milkman. This is a special guy. He's got a special world. I mean, he's got butter and milk and eggs, and he's got cottage cheese and all that. He is not delivering the daily news. So he has a different mystique. And he's a career man. Most milkmen, are you aware that most milkmen have done nothing else in their lives? Oh, no, don't look so sad. No, this is a very important... No, this is their world. And everyone has a kind of... Oh, isn't that sad? No. They started out in the beginning working for the dairy, and they know their route like they know the back of their hand. And by the way, they know more about you than you think they know about you. And you know that the milkman always carries with him what he calls his book. Now, what has the book got in it? Well, the book not only has all the accounts, you know, of all the various people he serves, but in the back of the book, I'm going to tell you a little secret. In the back of the book, he has written 46,000 notes, all kinds of notes, like watch out for the yellow dog at the Johnsons, the yellow dog. Watch out for Mrs. L. And then he has little symbolic notes, which I won't even tell you what they mean. He's got little things like, watch out, every second Wednesday, her cousin Charlie is in, and he's, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's got this thing. Thousands of little notes that you don't even know that he knows. Now, why does he have those notes? Well, because on that day when he is sick, or maybe he takes his week off, he gives this book to the route foreman, who then runs that route, you see. And the first thing he does is he goes up to the makeup room. You know, they have a makeup room, which is the equivalent of the Air Force's ready room. He goes up to the makeup room, and he takes the book, and he reads all the notes. Watch out for that chick, the one that lives above the meat market. She's got real problems, and if she invites you in, walk the other way rapidly. Yeah, I'm seriously, that's the kind of things he's got, they've got in the back. And so the guy reads these notes, you see. And that book, have you ever seen that book? It's a big, thick one, and he puts a big rubber band around it. And so these guys were trying to express the spirit of that whole world, the spirit of the milk truck driver's world. And I was part of it. Well, I didn't actually play Pan. You'll never guess what I played. I'm going to have to honestly admit to you what I played. They had made, out of paper mache, they had made a big cow. And there it was. It was kind of a lumpy one.
and it was painted gold. It was a gold cow. Now, I don't think these guys ever heard of the golden calf. I don't think that's what they were referring to. It was a big gold cow, had big horns, big cow standing there, and it had the most gigantic set of plumbing you ever saw in your life, because this is the thing that these guys were involved with. It was fantastic. I mean, it had these, oh, wow, you know, talk about an obscene cow. Well, this cow was standing on a field of green felt. It was supposed to represent grass, you see. It was on green felt, big golden cow, and they had a big silver pail that had big red roses all around the side of it. The red roses, of course, represented Mrs. Sherby's idea of what was beauty, actually. She had red roses all around the side of this thing. And they had a golden stool there. Guess who sat on the golden stool and pretended to milk the cow for over 45,000 miles of parade on the big day? Guess who? And they gave me a straw hat that sat on the top of my head. I represented like the barefoot boy with cheeks of tan, that kind of thing. And they gave me some old overalls that were torn off, and I sat on the top of this thing. And the other guy, Stan, the kid, he stood on the other side, and he represented also barefoot boy with cheeks of tan. And he had a big, like, what looked like a big whisk broom, and he was like swishing flies off this thing, you know. And as he did, though, so that the audience wouldn't see it, he was actually working a little handle on the side of the cow that made it wag its tail. You got that thing? And once in a while, he would step on a button that was at his foot, and the cow would go, mmm. Well, now you have not seen the rest of it, friends. They had built a mountain out of all kinds of cotton balls, big cotton balls behind us, and that represented the spirit of cottage cheese. That this gigantic cottage cheese mountain, oh, big cottage cheese mountain behind us, and all around, they had the butter, they had all kinds of big golden pieces of butter and everything else all around. And sitting on top of the whole business was this girl, this big Polish girl, who was the daughter of one of the root foremen, this fantastic girl named Helene. I always remember her name was Helene Kiblick or something like that. This fantastic, broad beam. Talk about the Earth Mother. I'll tell you, it was what a symbolic thing. And she sat up there, and she was dressed in long white robes. And she was the spirit of motherhood. The spirit of motherhood. And on the other, on the side, all the way around, it says, milk, the perfect food. There she was, and I'll tell you, you know, she would have been a wonderful, wonderful ad for maiden form. And there she was. She was as well equipped as the cow. And we rode through the streets with the golden bugles blowing, and I'm milking this thing. And they had it fixed up with faucets. And as I would pull these things, this white fluid, they had taken water and colored it white with milk of magnesia. I would go, and it would go down into the pails. And then out through the bottom of the pail and back through the cow again. And it was one of the greatest moments of glory I've ever known. And as we rode through the streets with my little straw hat, I can remember all the people cheering, yay, whoa, 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 whoa. And above us, lit up, red, white, and blue, was that big round wheel with the two big horses. And underneath it says, Local 722-146-SJ7, Labor Day Parade. The Labor People March. Da 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 da. Barefoot boy with chan of teeks. Cheeks of chan of whoopies. We'll see you tomorrow, friend.
This is
WBAI, New York. Gene Shepherd's Labor Day Show from 1966. September 5th, to be precise, here on Mass Backwards, WBAI, New York. Well, let's see. Coming up on Sunday on the Golden Age of Radio, something I've been putting off maybe too long, we're going to listen to some recordings from last year's Friends of Old Time Radio Convention. I believe it's going to be George Lefferts, one of the main adapters for Dimension X and X-1, who did a panel. And I guess we'll also hear some science fiction radio, if indeed that will be the theme. We also have the Sunday morning brunch chat with the various personalities who were at the convention. So look for that in weeks to come on the Golden Age of Radio to get us ready for this year's Friends of Old Time Radio Convention coming up the third week of October. Oh, by the way, Mike Sargent wanted me to let you know that there are passes here at the station for the motion picture Appaloosa, a Western. And you have to come by the station to pick them up at 120 Wall Street, 10th floor. I'm not sure how you get in. You may have to call the switchboard during business hours to be let into the station. That's 212-209-2800. Appaloosa on Wednesday. It's Wednesday at 6:30. So you only have a day to get those tickets. And look at that. It's 6 a.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York. This has been Max Schmid. And coming right up will be Wake Up Call here on WBAI New York.